Or if that cannot be, because presumably the person may lack those members of his body, for what of the same part, then as nearly as may be, in some other part of at least equal value and estimation, in the opinion of a jury, and moreover, shall forfeit one half of his lands and goods to the sufferer. Now this is a remarkable piece of legislation. It's remarkable first because it's incredibly repressive. It's almost the ancient Hebrew code of eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth. In fact, it is. But it reveals something else that Jefferson doesn't often let us see. That his exalted ideal of the frontier yeoman farmer is in fact complicated by a different reality. And in this case, the reality is a popular game played by yeomen called rough and tumble, the object of which is to disfigure your opponent. It's done by sharpening your nail thumbs into claws and gouging out the eyes of your opponent. If you can't get a good gouge, biting off the nose is always good. If you can rip off a piece of ear, bite off a lip, maybe even get a whole tongue. Jefferson is aware of that reality. And while he champions the cause of these people, one can see that there's a disjuncture between his idealization of the frontiersman and the reality of a very often drunken, rowdy, and ultra-violent group. Finally, I want to look at his legislation on witchcraft, which is quite revealing. Jefferson doesn't believe in witchcraft. He doesn't believe in witches. One would expect that he would simply reject it as any kind of a crime. But in fact, he doesn't. All attempts to delude the people or to abuse their understanding by exercise of the pretended arts of witchcraft, conjuration, enchantment, or sorcery, or by pretended prophecies, shall be punished by ducking and whipping at the discretion of a jury not exceeding 15 stripes. And again, we see a conflict in Jefferson's vision here. On the one hand, he's rejecting the reality of witchcraft, stating that there are no such things as witches. There is no devil. But at the same time, he's seeing that that the claim to witchcraft is an abuse of public confidence, and one whose punishments are in fact the traditional punishments from the 17th century. That is in fact how Puritans and others dealt with witches, ducking and whipping. I want now to turn from his attempted legal reforms to his tenure as governor. Because in many ways, if these previous moments were high points in Jefferson's development, his experience as governor is a low point. In fact, it's a time of great travail. It's probably the worst moment in Jefferson's life. He was elected governor on June 1st, 1779, and reelected the following year. And it was during this period that Virginia was invaded. And Jefferson, in fact, almost captured by the British. At the end of this period, his wife dies, and we'll look at the way that changes his experience, the way that colors his emotional life. But I want to first to look at that governorship. And it's a governorship that ends in disgrace, because he fails to resist the British. And I want to point something out. Many historians have tried to argue that Jefferson couldn't succeed in this endeavor. He couldn't stop the British because of his own belief in states' rights and the limited powers that the Constitution gave the governor. That Jefferson was a pacifist and was not meant for war. Well, that may well be the case, but certainly Jefferson was not inhibited by a lack of will in opposing the British, nor of an almost vitriolic hostility to them. This is certainly exemplified in the story of the case of Lieutenant Colonel Hamilton. Lieutenant Colonel Hamilton is a British commander who's operating in the Northwest Territory, and he's been charged with raising Indian raids against American settlers. It's important to remember the Northwest Territory at this point is still claimed by Virginia as part of its own state. So George Rogers Clark had been dispatched to deal with Hamilton and had been quite successful. He captures Hamilton and his force in the Northwest Territory, and brings him back with his two fellow officers in chains. As soon as Jefferson receives these prisoners, he sticks them in a dungeon in irons. They're not allowed visitors, no pen and paper, no books. All of this violates the terms of their capitulation. So certainly Jefferson has the ability to demonize his opponents. In fact, Jefferson describes this harsh treatment, given the crimes that they were charged with, as, and I quote, an act of benevolence. Now, this causes a lot of concern on the part of the commander-in-chief, George Washington, because he realizes if you treat British officers like this, the British will enact reprisals on American officers that have been captured. So he begs Jefferson to release him from irons. And while Jefferson eventually complies, he drags his feet as long as he possibly can. And when he does release them from irons, he refuses to parole them unless they promise not to speak publicly against the United States or their treatment, something obviously they can't pledge to do.